everything you have into this, put your heart, your soul, sweat, blood, tears, put it all into this and just make it work. And that's what I did.
Welcome to Someone Like You, a podcast that highlights the experiences of women, immigrants, and people of color who are building empires, creating amazing things, and changing the world. Here, we celebrate underrepresented stories and unheard voices. Greg Eubanks is one of LA's top producing real estate agents, a mentor, and personal development leader. In this episode, we talk mental health, having a chip on your shoulder, perseverance, and building generational wealth in the Black community.
So to set the scene a little bit, you and I met in a basketball league. You were, of course, the leading scorer in the league. And you play with this really tough style, kind of a chip on your shoulder, definitely a strong competitive spirit. Where did you get that from? Have you always had that as part of your personality?
Yeah, I think growing up, I didn't have like a rough childhood, but I think I wouldn't call it rough, but definitely had to fight my way through certain stages of life as a kid. I was an undersized kid, smaller than the rest of the kids for definitely junior high and high school. And just the environment I grew up in, kids were making fun of one another and picking on one another. And I got bullied a little bit, especially I remember my ninth grade where I got one of the wrestlers, I was on a basketball team, two of the wrestlers picked me up, put me in one of the lockers and locked the locker before practice. So like, I'm banging on the locker trying to get it open. And, you know, it was humiliating. It was just, you know, it's just one of those times you'll forever remember. And so I just remember times like that. And that kind of built that chip on my shoulder of just wanting to, you know, be seen as strong, overcoming challenges and obstacles, and just ultimately being the best person I can be and having people notice that.
It makes a lot of sense knowing where your story has taken you in your journey. So way back then when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I think like a lot of kids, I wanted to be a pro athlete. You know, I wanted to play basketball. I wanted to be in the NBA. I just thought that was the coolest thing ever to be able to do a job that you get paid to play basketball. And so that was, you know, young, that was always the goal. But as you get older and the talent isn't quite matching up to the attention you need in order to do that, you start to think of other routes. And I really had a hard time figuring out what I wanted to do as I got into high school and even college. I just remember it was some long nights trying to pick a major because I just didn't know. At one time I wanted to get into technology and I wanted to be an engineer. And another time I really wanted to get into video and cinematography and becoming a director. Then I ended up getting a major in kinesiology. Where I wanted to just do something in sports, whether it was physical therapy, occupational therapy, or sports medicine. I did an internship with the Minnesota Timberwolves for a couple of seasons. And so I was just really out there just trying to find my path. And it was good. You know, I think it was important. For me, it actually worked out that I didn't know what I wanted to do because it allowed me to explore all these different options, and really trying to hone in on like what I'm going to really gravitate to. Towards rather than just picking something up front and never experiencing anything outside of that.
So what are some of those steps and how did you find yourself in the real estate industry?
You know, the beautiful thing about real estate was that, you know, it really was the big inspiration came from my mother. I seen my mother early on. She was a loan originator, loan officer, doing loans. She had bought a few properties and she was just really successful. And she always embedded into me and my brother that she wanted to make sure we got off to a great start in life. And so, you know, I start working at 13 years old. I got my first real job at 15 working at Taco Bell. and then at the age of 18, you know, she was like, I want to make sure you have great credit because I want you to buy a home. And so by the time I turned 20, I was actually able to buy my first property. It was actually a duplex in North Minneapolis. And that's really what sparked my intense interest in real estate. I was a junior in college. I had a duplex. I was renting out the top and the bottom unit. I was cash flowing almost $1,000 a month, you know, as a junior in college. And I had like a part-time, wasn't even working full-time, you know? And so the possibilities of real estate really struck a chord with me at that time, saying, man, the opportunity is limitless in real estate. And so I went on to hold on to that duplex for a while. I ended up buying a condo in Minneapolis, and then I ended up moving out here to Los Angeles and went into the corporate world, worked for Hershey. And during that time, I was just unfulfilled. And I was always like, I wanted to do more in real estate. So I decided to get my real estate license in 2014. And that's really like how I really got into real estate at that time.
So I don't want to gloss over this moment. So back in 2009, over 10 years ago, you packed up and took off, left your home, and ended up here in LA. What inspired that big leap of faith?
It was a multitude of things. At that time, life was not going well for me. I was in a 7-year relationship that ended in 2009, which was gut wrenching. It was heartbreaking, and it put me in a big black deep hole of depression. And then also at that same time, I was working at Target in a corporate job, and that wasn't going too well. And so it's just my world felt like it was crashing down for a while. I mean, It got pretty bad. I remember at Target, there'd be days where I was just overwhelmed with emotions. I'd have to go take a break, and I'd go out to the parking lot in my car and just cry. You know, it was that bad for me at that point in time. But it was actually what was needed at that time for me to flip the chapter. You know, I really desperately needed to flip the chapter in life. And so sometimes I believe God just puts you in positions where it's painful as you're going through it, but once you get past that pain and you get past the storm, the clouds part, and there's this whole new like environment, this whole new world. And that's what LA brought to me, because life was going so bad. And once I got fired from Target, which was never, I knew it was coming, I already made plans of like, as soon as I'm let go of this job, I'm going to a different state. Like, it was between California and Texas. I flew out to California because I knew a friend that was out there, and I spent the weekend with him, and I just had such a great time. And I asked him, like, hey, I'm thinking about moving here in a few months, man. What do you think? He was like, dude, I got you. You can stay on my couch for, you know, however long you need. And that was all I needed. Once he told me that, that was the confirmation that I needed that I was coming to California. So literally I got fired like February, I think, 19th of 2010.
Okay.
And by March the 3rd, I was out in LA. Like, I packed everything up in my car, and I just drove. I did a going away party to tell everybody bye. And I packed everything in my car, every belonging that I could possibly fit in my car. And I drove out to California. It took 32 hours. So it was 2 16-hour days. I stopped in Denver, spent the night there, and I did the other 16, and I was in California and never left since.
Wow. I love it. You're home now. So I'm curious, going through that experience, I know, especially 10 years ago, mental health was not something that was talked about so much, especially for men, especially for Black men. What was your kind of feeling going through that experience? Could you talk about it with people around you? How did you navigate that?
Yeah, it was a really difficult time. I think my mom was there for me, so I would talk to her, but it was just one of those things that, yeah, I definitely didn't associate it with mental health. I just felt really sad, you know, because of my circumstances. I was just like, things that I wanted, I couldn't have. You know, people that I, you know, the girl that I loved at that time that didn't want to continue a relationship, just blew my mind, you know, that I could feel so strongly about someone and they didn't feel the same for me. And it was the first time I ever experienced that. And so it was a great deal of heartbreak. And I learned a lot about myself, just about how I love. And I think that's very important for many people. You've got to understand languages and how you love and how to protect yourself, but also how to enhance that love, especially when it's, you know, interacting with other people. And so I didn't really know how to handle that love at that early of an age. And so things faltered, and there were regrets, and there was just a bunch of things that negatively impacted me because I just didn't know how to foster that love and how to transmit it. And so the deep depression, and it was, to me, yeah, it's definitely aligned with mental health. What really helped was just the support system I had at that time. I was involved in you know, with a church that that helped me through that as well. You know, I had a couple of just one-on-one sit-down sessions that really was transformative for me. But again, it wasn't an overnight process. It took more than a year for me to really get back to a sense of normality, you know, where I wasn't sad and wasn't tears streaming down my eyes and at the most random times. You know, it took a while.
So once you made it to LA, did you start to see that light at the end of the tunnel, or what was the journey like once you arrived here?
Oh yeah. You know, Los Angeles allowed me to press the reset button. It allowed me to start all over. It allowed me to keep the things in the past, because Minnesota felt like the past. So the fact that I was now disconnected from the environment that I grew up in, and in the environment where there was this trauma that was associated, allowed me to just reset, you know, refresh, start all over. And it changed my mindset in the sense that now I had to really think about, how to make it in a big city. I mean, I came here with maybe $2,500, $2,500. Like, that's what I came here, and I was sleeping on someone's couch. And so the mindset shifted from like all the sadness to survival. Like, how do I make it out here? And that was tremendous, because now it kept my mind off of those things, and it kept my mind going like Los Angeles, this big city, getting a job. And I came here, I didn't have a job. I had some interviews lined up, but not even a job yet. And so it was just like, all right, I got to figure this out. And the palm trees and the beaches and all that stuff helped as well. You know, just being in this new environment, it was exciting. It was vibrant. It was Los Angeles, or it was Hollywood, Venice Beach, like all of these things. It helped me really improve my mental health. Like, it really did, you know. I wouldn't attribute the smog to it, but pretty much everything else really, you know, I was playing a lot of basketball at that time too, because, you know, I wasn't working full time at the point. So I was getting to the gym, playing ball, connected, making friends. It was just a great rebuilding time for me.
So what did that period look like as you tried to survive and build a new chapter, navigate your career here? What did that process look like?
It was really just a day-by-day process and just thinking, being focused. And as soon as I got out here, I was interviewing. There was a job that I really wanted. It was with the Hershey Company as a sales rep / account manager. It came with a company car, company computer, a lot of autonomy where you got to go out and drive in to different grocery stores and just try to drive business. And the candy business. It was a job that I wanted. And so I interviewed with them in like March. You know, again, I got here in March and I started the interview process with them in March, and they didn't hire me till August. So that was like a 5-month process of just sitting back waiting. Every interview was 2-3 weeks in between, and it just took them forever to finally get them. But in between that time, I was working part-time at Cohan in Pasadena and Glendale. And then I was also collecting a little bit of unemployment. So I was just piecing things together, just figuring it out.
Making it work.
And it was all working. Like, there wasn't a day that I've been here that I felt like I was struggling, like to try to make it work. I was just, I had a plan. I was going to sleep on his couch. I had a little bit of money saved up. I was getting this unemployment. I was keeping my expenses down. I was waiting to get this job offer from Hershey, and in August it came. And when that came, you know, things really opened up for me, because then it allowed me to go get my own place. I had this bachelor unit in Venice, in the Mar Vista area. I'll never forget it. It wasn't a big place. It was just a bachelor. Had a sink, a small bathroom, didn't even have a stove. It had like the kitchenette little situation with the hot plates, but it was mine. And I had a air mattress that would pop every 2 to 3 months. So I had to but it was my place. It was $600. And when I've got my place, that it was a very joyous moment for me, because it's like, I'm really making it out here. I got my own place, like no roommate, no anything. And it wasn't a good area. Mar Vista is like 2 miles from the ocean. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know, it was just a real monumental moment for me. And that really instilled a lot of confidence in me, you know, as far as like possibilities, like you can really make anything happen.
So I love that you say that. At that point, did you know what a bigger dream looked like or not? Was that still coming to fruition for you and shaping up in your mind as far as what you wanted next?
I didn't, you know, even though I took that big risk to Los Angeles, I was still very, very calculated. So, you know, it was just like, I got to get a corporate job you know, with a salary and benefits. And so once I got that job, I was comfortable, you know, I was content. There was a lot of contention there. I was just grateful just to have that opportunity. And so that did stall, you know, my growth, you know, for some time, because I actually overstayed my welcome at Hershey. I was at Hershey from 2010 to 2015 in the same position, never promoted. Well, in order for me to, that's another story. In order for me to promote, I would have had to relocate out of Los Angeles. And that's something I didn't want to do. Like they gave me some opportunities in like Indianapolis, which I was like, definitely not. they gave me an opportunity in Hershey, Pennsylvania, back at the headquarters. And I'm like, there's no way I'm living in a small town. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm living in LA. This was my dream. Like, there was a couple opportunities I just declined, and I stayed in that position for too long. And so that's one thing I do regret. You know, I ended up getting my real estate license in 2014 while I was still working at Hershey, because I was trying to create an exit plan, but I stayed there for extremely too long.
So was there a specific prompt to get your real estate license, or was it just that feeling of, you know, stagnation, maybe I need the next thing to help me grow? Because you're a go-getter. Like, I can't imagine you being complacent for 5 years. That's hard to picture.
Yeah. So you just got it. Like, again, I had a company car. I wasn't paying no car insurance. I was getting my mileage reimbursed. You know, to be honest, at Hershey, I think I was making $60,000-$65,000. So that's not a whole lot here in LA, but it is something, you know.
Sure.
You know, and you know, so I just felt like, all right, this is cool. But at a certain point in time, like they were asking me to promote. And again, like I do have an ambitious nature to me. And so it's like, I can't do this forever, but I don't want to promote by going somewhere else. I don't want to start all over again. I need to make it work here in LA. So as I was just brainstorming, it was just like something came about me in 2013. You know, I seen one of my fraternity brothers. I'm part of fraternity Kappa Alpha Psi. And he was doing well as a real estate agent. So I started talking to him like, hey, you know, I've been in real estate. I've had a couple properties, and I'm thinking about getting my license. And so he just really, he helped pave the way for me to get my license. He's just like, yeah, man, you should get it. I've got a couple of resources. We can get your classes taken. You can have your license in like 3 or 4 months. And so took him up on that. And I ended up getting my license. And once I got my license, I was just doing it part-time. So I was working Hershey, you know, during the day. And in between, when I found time, I was trying to practice the real estate, trying to learn. On the weekends, I was doing open houses, really trying to figure out, like, is this for me? And how do I make this work?
So was there a specific moment when you realized, you know, this is purposeful, or this is what I want to be doing? Or is it just a gradual realization?
It took some time, because my first year from, you know, my first 12 months in real estate, I'm doing it part-time, but it's not like part-time, like 5 hours a week. Like I'm putting in like, you know, 20 hours, 25 hours, you know, trying to string along some deals. You know, on the weekends, I'm doing open houses, which can be 4 to 5 hours of my time. Creating flyers, you know, trying to door knock, you know, really trying to figure out, like, how do I start getting this business going? And the first 12 months, I didn't do a deal. You know, I did zero goose egg, nothing, didn't make a dime, you know, and I was just like, I don't know if this is for me. Like, I'm just doing this and nothing's working out. I fell out of three escrows. And like, when you look at the commission on those three escrows, it was like $30,000 to $35,000. So, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't get that money, you know, it was almost, but not close enough. And I was just like, this business is too tough for me. And I just felt like I never felt like truly giving up, but it was definitely in the back of my mind. Like, dude, if something doesn't happen quickly, you're going to have to pivot, man. And the way the stars align, it's just amazing. Like, you think, you know, manifesting I ended up getting let go of Hershey in 2015, you know, because it was crazy. I was one of the top 50 reps all throughout the country. And I went to Vegas for the national sales meeting. I was acknowledged and recognized. And then literally like a month later, I had to get a call that they were letting me go.
Wow.
What I believe is at that sales meeting, I was telling a few people about real estate and how I got my license, and that was a long time. And I think word spread because, again, they were trying to promote me. And, you know, I did communicate to them that I did want to get promoted, but, you know, I was looking for the right opportunity. So I think once they found out that, man, this guy's doing real estate, you know, corporate ways, they can find their way to get rid of you. So they ended up letting me go August of 2015. And at that time, I had only did like two deals, you know, so, you know, I hadn't been successful at real estate, just got let go of Hershey, and I'm unemployed, you know, trying to do real estate that I haven't made any money on. So at that point, that was a juncture in my road. And I'll never forget the conversation I had with my mother. I called her, was like, Mom, what do I do? Yeah. Do I go find another corporate job, which I know is going to not be an ambitious thing for me, and it's probably not going to fulfill me, but it will be a stopgap and it'll help get me to start making money again. Or do I go full-time with real estate now, be commission only? And I was so nervous about that decision, but thought about it and I was like, this is the time. This is the exact time for you to take that leap of faith.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you have into this, put your heart, your soul, sweat, blood, tears, put it all into this and just make it work. And that's what I did. August 2015, I'm just like, all right, we're going to go do it. You know, I had a little bit of money, a little bit more money this time around, invested some of it into like lead generation and just building a real estate business. And before you know it, you know, get my first year, I did zero deals. Second year, I did three deals. Third year, I did eight deals. Next year, 17. Next year, 24. And currently right now, if you trail back my last 12 months, I've done 33 deals.
Wow. Look at that. It's amazing. So now 5 years in, tell me about it. It seems like you're so passionate and this is really something you're meant to do. Do you feel that way?
Absolutely. I believe in that, you know, especially that saying, I believe to a certain degree is that, you know, when you find something you love, as far as working, it'll never feel like work.
Mm-hmm.
I subscribe to that to a certain degree. Like some days it is like, I the passion is there. Like I love the space of real estate, the opportunity, the ability to connect with others, the ability to help and advocate for others, put mm-hmm. people in better positions. You know, the wealth that's built, you know, the generational wealth that's built, you know, and especially in when I've been so focused on like my community and those that look like me and helping them achieve, you know, financial success and something that they can pass on, especially in times like this, when we have all of this racial tension going on and injustices and all of that. So, you know, it's just something that I've really fallen into. And I just know I was meant to do this, and it gives me so much purpose that it allows me to really go even harder. And now, you know, I don't pass down any opportunities because I'm continuing to try to grow a brand, build a reputation,
mm-hmm.
and Yeah, I think it's just only starting for me. I think, you know, there's layers to this that as long as I continue to bring the work ethic, that is going to open many doors.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like you're always working. You work so hard. And it does seem like your star is absolutely on the rise. I'm seeing you on VH1. I'm seeing you on these national websites. So where do you want to go next? What are some of your goals for the future?
I think the big thing is just, you know, really trying to become the best real estate agent I can right now. You know, I think the more notoriety, the more, you know, press and all that. And this is all really just based off of, you know, just trying to build a great reputation and doing mm-hmm. things the right way, being honest, being truthful, being kind, being helpful. And really just establishing myself as really, I want to be one of the premier agents in all of Los Angeles. You know, that's a big goal of mine. If I could just really rise up the ranks, and I'm fairly young as a real estate agent, I'm only 35 years old. The average real estate agent's like 52 or 53. So there's so much more growth I feel like, you know, in my real estate career, within the next 5 years. And so I'm really focused on that. I've put together this plan of just really being a top producer or even more of a top producer, real estate agent. And you know, once I get to that certain status, and it's really about, you know, bringing others up and creating a team and ultimately building a brokerage, of, you know, real estate agents and staff, that can truly, you know, be a business that will prolong and proceed and go past, you know, me, you know. So sure. that's really what I'm focused on. And I'm really, you know, focused on that. And then also, you know, this is more of a longer term goal, is just the real estate development side. Like I'm really starting to educate myself on real estate development, mm-hmm. Which in turn, you know, again, I want to be able to help in different ways. And so I think with like Black people, especially and minorities and people of color, you know, trying to provide, you know, housing, you know, affordable housing.
Yeah.
And really getting into it on that scale and on that political scale too, of where we're just bringing access and resources to those that are less fortunate.
That's amazing. It seems like as long as I've known you, giving back, uplifting other people, whether that's your community or just the people around you, is really central to who you are. Talk to me about that. Is that something you got from your mother? Is that just your personality?
Yeah, I think altruism was always a thing in me, mine, and just trying to help others in a time of need. I think the way I was brought up and raised was to not only just think about yourself, but think about those around you. You know, especially I grew up in the church, and I mean, my mom took us to church every week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, you know, listening to the sermon, listening to the parables, listening to the omens, and really trying to be more godlike as far as loving others. You know, that's always, you know, been a big principle of mine. So, you know, joined a fraternity back in college back in 2005. And one of my big reasons of joining a fraternity was for community service and inspiring mm-hmm. and in the public interest. And so, you know, I became the Guy Wright director, which was the head mentor of a chapter for our high school mentorship group in mm-hmm. junior high as well. And I started, you know, being active in that in 2012. And it was just so fulfilling to be able to give back in that degree. And it was also a great way for me to connect with the younger generation. I think in order to help any generation, you've got to be like on the ground and really connecting with them and building relationships. And so it really allowed me to see firsthand like what they go through, what type of successes they have, what type of failures, what type of stress, depression, what type of peer pressure, mm-hmm. all of those things. You know, I got to know, learn on a more intimate level of just what they're going through. And it was really more targeted and emphasis on like Black boys, but just anybody was accepted into the program. So, I mean, we had Black, we had Hispanic, White, everybody. And, you know, that was really fulfilling for me, you know, even though it was volunteering and I wasn't making a dime from doing that, but just to be able to be a part of a movement where we're helping them developing certain critical skills and just opening and expanding their mind to things that they aren't typically privy to. Like, we took them to Google, did a field trip there. You know, we introduced them to golf at a young age where they got to go out there and understand what that is and the mental toughness and what golf provides and skill and the discipline. And it's just an amazing program that I hope everybody kind of considers it at one point in time of doing some type of like community service or volunteer toward the younger generation and helping them.
Did you have mentors like that growing up, or are you trying to fill a role that you personally never had?
I never was a part of a program like that growing up. You know, I just played basketball. So I think that the biggest, you know, mentors that were outside of my family were probably like my basketball coaches.
Sure.
I mean, you know, I joined a couple of traveling teams, and I remember a couple of them. Like, one of them, his name was Coach Smith, you know, back in North Minneapolis at North Commons. You know, he ran our team for a couple of years, and he had the probably most filthiest mouth ever. Like, we were like 11, 12 years old, and he cussed us out like a sailor, like all the time. He would just always be cussing us out, like if we were messing up or we didn't do that. But we all looked at it. We didn't look at it as like he was a bad person. It was just his communication style, but he really cared about us. Like, we definitely knew he cared about us tremendously. And he's somebody I'll never forget, you know, those couple of years that he coached us, and he just took the time out to help develop our skills. And, you know, he would drive us to tournaments and get us stuff to eat. And, like, you know, that to me was like really special. And having those type of memories of him is something I want to just, you know, pay forward, you know, and be able to be that type of guy for, you know, kids now.
I love it. And now you have a one-year-old son, so you also get to share those lessons with him. How has being a father changed you personally, professionally? That's a big life transition. So talk to me about it.
Yeah. Having a child is, you know, it's been a blessing. It's something that, you know, to be honest, wasn't something that I was expecting, like wasn't planned, you know, it happened. And, you know, you just have to be reactive to it and take it in. But it's definitely been the biggest blessing that I've had in life up until this point. It's having my young son, Elijah. You know, he's a year and a half now. And it's just great, you know, having that type of responsibility and just watching him grow, watching him develop, you know, seeing the motor skills, the cognitive skills improve, and seeing the dependency he has and, mm-hmm. and love that is needed for him. It's just a great experience. And you know, he's not talking yet, so I can't wait to mm-hmm. to once, you know, I have to be able to communicate to him on that type of level. But there's no other love that compares to it. There's nothing that parallels to it. And so, like, I'm taking parenthood very seriously. I'm co-parenting. And, you know, my big thing is just trying to have that life-work balance, because, you know, the success I've been able to attain, you know, it does require a lot of hours of my day. And so, you know, my big thing is just having that work-life balance, making sure that I'm spending a lot of time with them, especially in these infancy years, you know, because you'll never get them back.
Yeah.
So it's really, that's like one of my biggest struggles. It's like to truly create that work-life balance where I'm spending a considerable amount of time with him.
How do you navigate that? Or is it just an ongoing ebb and flow? Do you have any tips or tricks for creating that balance?
Definitely ebbs and flows, but, you know, just got to be intentional as, you know, you're setting your schedule up every week and really, you know, time blocking, I think is critical. You know, saying, look, this is the time that's going to be spent. I'm not going to let anything interfere with that. Nothing conflict with that. Like, it's just, this is just what it's going to be. And I'm going to stick to it. And, you know, when I'm done, I'm sure everything's going to still be all right. Nothing should have been devastated. So that's the big focus, is just time blocking and keeping that consistent each week.
That's great. Yeah, I think that's a really helpful technique and tool to really set your own boundaries. I'm wondering, you mentioned a few, but what do you feel like are some of the keys to your success thus far?
I think one is keeping God first / like mental health. Mm-hmm. I think you've always got to be in a good state of mind in order to be productive and to be efficient and to work at a high level. I've had times where life has really kicked my butt, and I've had depression. And those times it was really difficult to perform. And so when those times come, it's just like making sure I address it, I confront it immediately, and figure out what are the solutions going to be, whether that's, talking to friends, consistently every day, if that's going to a therapist. Mm-hmm. If that's finding other ways to alleviate the stress or the pain that's associated. So I think that's a big key. Number two, I think it's just discipline. I think there's just a high level of discipline that's needed in order to be successful at anything. And you've got to outwork, there's this saying, outwork the work from all these influencers. And always subscribe to that. That's a clever saying, outwork the work. But it just means like the work ethic, the discipline has to be there. And there's no coincidence, why people are successful. They've put in the time and the energy to perfect the craft that they're in or gain the knowledge or the education in order to excel. And so I knew if I wanted to be cream of the crop, I was going to have to work 2-3 times harder. And that can be difficult, especially trying to balance out life. But there's that sacrifice that you just have to be ready and available for if you really want it. And I think people never match up the success with the work required. Mm-hmm. They only see the success. You look at an athlete, you look at like LeBron James, you see the success, but you don't see the practice. You don't see the insane level he's in the gym and working out and his diet. Just how serious he takes all that stuff. There's no coincidence why he's like the best, basketball player in the world right now. I take that same sense and I apply it to what I'm doing in real estate. In order for me to be one of the best, I've got to have that same type of focus and concentration. And I think that's a big key to success. So.
That's great. So as you're going through this ongoing journey, so much hard work, how do you stay inspired?
Right now the big motivation is my child. Being able to provide for my family. It's a big inspiration for me. I think I've always been inspired by attaining things that felt unattainable. Mm-hmm. Becoming a millionaire, people say money's not everything. And, I want to be in a place where I've got money and then I'll say that at that time. But I don't want to be like a broke person just saying money's not everything. I like the challenge. I like challenges. And I think like you say, becoming a millionaire, it's a challenge. You've got to figure out, the role, the pathway for you that's going to get you there. And it's not going to be an easy one. And so I'm inspired by the sheer challenge of how do I become a millionaire? Mm. How do I crack the code? How do I figure out that Rubik's Cube to get in that space? And that's like, it's exciting to me. It's exhilarating. Like, all right, well, I got to figure this out. And there's suspense around it. There's ups and downs around it. It's dramatic. But it's exciting. I truly like those type of challenges. And so that's like the key thing that fuels me, is telling me I can't do something, mm-hmm. I can go out there and try to do it.
Love it. Sounds just like you driving through the paint saying I'm going to get to the rim. Seems exactly right.
Absolutely. Can't wait to get back to basketball.
So one thing I know about you is you've always been extremely open about your journey and the highs and the lows, whether that's, you know, when you share with the young men that you mentor or on your Instagram, you share with anyone who follows you. Why is it so important to you to be honest and open about all of the experiences along the way?
It's great that you mentioned that. I did a date and love and relationship podcast a couple years ago. And during that time, I had a breakup. This is 2017. You know, I've had two bad breakups, one I mentioned in 2009 and another one in 2017. And you know, during that podcast, I was just free-for-all, just straight up open and transparent. And I think the reason why, you know, I've subscribed to just being so honest and open is because it helps me heal. Me being able to like communicate exactly what I'm feeling internally and not sugarcoating it or putting up these roadblocks. I think putting up roadblocks and not being honest and trying to be something I'm not only has hindered me in life. And mm-hmm. So I think I've just learned from those lessons. Like, I don't want to be hindered. So, you know, I want to be direct. I want to be open. I want to be transparent because that's the only way I'm going to grow out of situations. And I know that I'm not perfect and I don't want anybody to think that I'm perfect. I just don't, mm-hmm. You know, I want people to see the struggle. I want to see the, you know, let people know like the bad things that I've done because that's, again, that's part of me confessing that is part of the healing process. It's part of the forgiving myself. It's part of the transformation, you know, so that I do get better. And so I just, you know, I've always really believed in just doing that. You know, I don't want to be the superficial guy. I don't ever want to be fake in the funk. You know, you see that here in LA, they talk about being Hollywood and all of that. It was just, I never wanted to be ever put in that category. Like, man, I'd be faking it.
Yeah. You do see that a lot. And in my experience, the amazing added benefit of that is that it really builds trust and connection with other people. And I think maybe there's a connection there since relationships are a big part of your business. People feel like they know who you are and feel connected to you.
Yeah, it's critical. It's a critical thing.
All right. So we're going to finish off with a little lightning round. So I'm going to ask you a few questions and I just want you to give me the first thing that comes to your mind. All right.
Sounds good.
Okay. What scares you?
What scares me is, what scares me? I'd say death, I guess. And death, not just in the sense of just losing my life, but not having any ambition, not having any dreams, giving up on life, which can be found in depression and not valuing my life. That scares me.
Yeah. What are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of my son and just trying to be a great father and just proud of just trying to be a good family man, not just to my son, but to all my relatives.
Yes. When are you at your best?
I think I'm at my best when I am disciplined, you know, mm-hmm. So when I have focus on a certain goal and I'm carrying out those goals and executing on a high level.
Yeah. How do you define success?
Define success and just being fulfilled and being happy. and that could be anything. As long as you're fulfilled and you feel happy, then that is all the success that you need. And there's nothing to replace that. So it may not be financial. It may not be love. It may not. It can really be anything. It's just as long as you're fulfilled. You feel happy.
Amen. And how do you want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered as an advocate for change and an advocate for development. I think at the end of the day, you know, my tombstone or whatever was, he was one person for the people, cared about all those around him. He wanted the very best and he provided countless resources for improvement and he gave it his all.
If you enjoyed this episode, stay tuned for more to come, or visit lizmariestrategy.com for more resources, stories, and insights for creatives and entrepreneurs.